Blog Talk Radio.
And away we go. We're back after Memorial Day weekend vacation, medication, if you will. Anyway, Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, from the Twin Cities of Millennium and Paragon Cities. I'm your host, Pogo Man, and this is Paragon Radio, broadcasting live from the Paragon Radio News Satellite of a high orbit of 0.0167 feet above sea level. You figure that one out. It's Monday night, just past 8 p.m. on the East Coast of the United States of America. But enough about me and the show. I get by with a little help from my friends. And this one, some people say he's mad. Some people say he's a Viking. Most of us just call him Mad Viking.
And now for something completely different. Someone angering John Cleese.
Dun, 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 dun. What'd you say?
I couldn't believe that. We'll get to it in a bit.
Certain things you don't do in this world, and that's, you know, spit in the wind, step on Superman's cape, yada, yada, yada. You don't anger John Cleese. But anyway, how was your week off, sir? I know from this show, I know you were taking over the duties of several other shows.
I actually took a little bit of a break because I had to get running water back in my house again.
Oh, you didn't use the pump out back?
No. Now we didn't use your faithful air. We wanted to get the real thing going on. Yep.
Come on now. Anything don't do anything don't do. We were going to set up the outhouse for you too. Come on now. Since in Champions Online, we're doing the high noon at Gold, whatever it is, the high noon at Gold, St. Gold's. That's what it is, the high noon at St. Gold's thing going on till Wednesday. I don't know what happened last night, but the thing was all messed up. You only had zone two, and if you were in certain groups, you couldn't get any buffs or debuffs going on, nothing. I don't know what. People were just bailing out.
Well,
we couldn't get anything going.
That explains why Texas is going like, there's nobody here over on Champions. Because people are like, what the hell's going on?
I logged in. I forgot to do it before I went to a friend's house for dinner. I was like, damn, I forgot to do that. I could have done it all afternoon. What the hell was I thinking? I came back about 10, 10:15. I logged in. I'm like, where is everybody? Like, what the hell? There's still 4 days left. You figure everybody would be doing this, you know, trying to get their last second stuff. And then I'm hearing, don't join groups 4 and 8. They're bugged. I'm like, oh, shit. And I'm like, why can't I get into anything but group, you know, zone two? I'm like, oh, shit. And then I tried this morning. I went in the other room, got a cup of coffee, got a bagel, waited half an hour, and finally we got it done. So I was like, and I could do it after the show tonight because I got it, you know, that timer thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because I got it late, you know, last night. I was like, oh, cool. So I'm still
and
on pace
those
to get
have
those.
Spectrum, your TV cable will be out from 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. Don't know about your internet, but your TV cable will be out for maintenance. Just got a notice.
Oh, I have Optimum. You know what they do? Every once in a while, when you do least expect it and not paying attention, they like to do an emergency test. So sometimes when you fall asleep at 3 a.m., you'll hear, and it goes on for 30 seconds. At the maximum volume, no matter what volume you have your TV on, it'll do it 20 decibels higher. And you're like, what the f-? And all of a sudden you jump out of bed. What the fuck? I was watching a movie. Then I fell asleep too because, you know, I know I've seen the movie 100 times. That's why I put it on so I can fall asleep to it. And you're like, no matter what you have on your TV, somehow it breaks through.
But anyway,
yes.
Now
anyway, it is June. It is now June. We have left May behind us. It is now June, which means there is less than just barely less than 2 months until Dawn Con 8. The Ocho.
Minus the Viking,
and minus a lot of preparation. Which we must get to this week, people. Anybody who wants to help us prepare for Dawn Con 8, the Ocho, get in touch with me this week. We must have a meeting, I think, tomorrow night somehow.
I might be filling in for... I am going to be filling in for Coconut.
To what time?
Because he's taking June Tuesdays off. Unless another DJ wants to jump in.
This is why we can't get shit done.
I begin.
Now,
we got Thursday, yeah. Hopefully. Thunderstruck.
Well, that's
Metal Thing. And Ehrlich. So we have a hopeful on Thursday. It all depends on Thunderstruck. And Ehrlich.
All right. I should be around Thursday. All right. So Thursday. Okay.
Or if you want to talk like Joe Pesci, it's Thursday.
That's right.
Freaking Thursday.
Well, the two Utes. Well, what's a Ute? All right. Big news. I got big news.
Yeah, big news.
If you have Disney Plus, this Wednesday, Avatar, whatever the sequel is coming to Disney Plus. Whatever that.
Which
Avatar
is it? Is it Aang Avatar or is it Blue People Avatar?
Oh, it's Blue People Avatar. It's a sequel.
Blue
said
People
it's a
Avatar.
Right.
Okay.
It's a sequel. At Way of the Water or whatever it's called. I don't know. And then, well, I think one of the articles I'm going. Actually, I think that's one of the articles I'm going to read tonight.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I don't know.
Before you do that, should I jump into what I was rattling about?
Yeah, let's just jump into. Any Monty Python news is cool too. So just
yes,
jump on it.
There are certain rules in life.
Excuse me. Yes.
And one of them is do not go into an intellectual battle with people like John Cleese. Monty Python's Life of Brian star and co-writer John Cleese claims he has never said he would cut a scene that would consider offensive to the trans community from the upcoming stage adaptation of the film. What has now become known as the Loretta scene, before it was the Judean People's Front, where one of the male characters declares he wants to be a woman, and then he asks his friends to call him Loretta from now on. The punchlines therein rely on humor that has not aged well with transgender activists and allies, as the scene is dismissive of trans people. Cleese wrote Thursday that at a table reading of the upcoming stage adaptation of Life of Brian last year, he was advised to cut the Loretta scene, a proposition he has no intention of considering. Quote, from Cleese. A few days ago, I spoke to an audience outside of London. I told them that I was adapting The Life of Brian so we could do it as a stage show, not a musical. There is a musical already existing. It's called Not the Messiah. He's a Very Naughty Boy. It's an opera.
Mm-hmm.
And that was done by Eric Idle. Cleese wrote in a tweet on Thursday, I said that we had a table reading of the latest draft in New York City a year ago and that all the actors, several of them Tony winners, has advised me strongly to cut the Loretta scene. I have, of course, no intention of doing so. In the scene of Life of Brian, the Loretta character says, it's my right to have as a man, I want to have babies. It's every man's right to have babies if he wants them. Cleese's character then protests, saying it's impossible for men to have babies because they don't have a womb. That is part of the sticking point for viewers today, as it's understood that trans men can biologically bear children. I'm reading this from The Wrap. I want to point this out. Don't you oppress me, the Loretta character responds, and you can watch it all on YouTube. It's right there for you to see. Cleese's tweets came in response to misreported claims that Cleese said he at the speaking engagement that he would remove the scene in question. He said that someone in the audience has called a journalist and misreported me. Basically, none of the British media called to check. Cleese also revealed that the bright side scene of Life of Brian will also not be cut, contrary to reports. Untrue for a very good reason. We don't want to upset Eric Idle, as it's his only contribution to the Life of Brian's script.
Quite right. Justly so.
Now, whether you agree with the trans argument or you disagree, there, like I said, there's just some things you don't do. And one of them is get John Cleese going. Pokemon, you're old enough to remember this. He was asked to go to the BBC when Life of Brian was originally going to be released. And there was a big argument that there, people are making fun of Jesus Christ. Well, Python goes, let's get bringing the calmer head along with John Cleese. We'll bring in Michael Palin. It ended up Michael Palin going nuclear, and John Cleese is just sitting there looking dignified. So, needless to say, if you're going to get John Cleese, sooner or later, one by one, you're going to get all of Monty Python on you. So, it's like, just don't. You know, like I said, whether you believe it, you don't believe it, you're in the middle, doesn't matter. Rule is, don't piss off John Cleese. We've seen it already when he said he was going to do a, I guess you would call it the sequel to Fawlty Towers, and do it with his daughter. And he preempted before anything, and he says, I'm sorry, I didn't know that writing a sequel of my own intellectual property with my daughter will offend everybody. I am sorry in advance. He's out of the gate.
I didn't know the first one offended anybody.
Well,
like, holy
one of the sticking points is, if you remember the episode in question, the Hitler imitation. You know, when the Germans came in, don't mention the war. Yeah, that caused a little controversy at that time period.
Well, yeah, that time period.
It's like for the older generation, that's like gaslighting George Carlin. You don't do it. For the younger generation, that's like gaslighting Dave Chappelle. You don't do it.
Excuse me. You shouldn't mention Nazis, the war, and the war gaslighting.
Okay. But like I said, you just don't. You start John Cleese up, not only he's going to leave it in, it's probably going to be enhanced. Tell me I'm wrong. Me and you grew up with Monty Python. Tell me I'm wrong.
Oh, yeah. Oh. I mean, no, you're not wrong. No. Yeah, that's just the difference between that generation, I guess our generation, and this generation. It's just... You know, this generation needs to lighten the fuck up. You know, I say the woke generation needs to wake up. Just, you know, stop being offended by everything. Oh, my God.
You were saying something about someone was ready to start jumping on Gen X?
Oh, yeah. If you go on Instagram, there's this Asian guy, and he goes, when did we let Gen X off? It goes into more than that. Like all the other generations after Gen X get picked on because, for obvious reasons. Sorry. And he goes, when did we let Gen X off the hook? Why did you want to put us back on the hook? Why did you just leave us alone, Junior? We were happy playing our video games, playing D&D and online games, and just leave us
the
fuck alone.
Go-betweens. We were the ones that started, you know, the gaming community. We were, and at the same time, outside playing.
A woman said it best. We gave you online. You fucked it up with all these new apps you guys created. We gave you AOL, and you did, I don't know what the fuck you guys are doing today with it. We created the internet for everybody. It's not our fault some greedy ass members of our generation conglomerated into three, you know, billion-dollar corporations. We wanted it to be for everybody, but a few assholes, you know. You're just jealous because we had the best music and movies compared to your generation.
Oh. Yeah, and that brought me up to the recent Mel Brooks History of the World Part 2. That wasn't Mel Brooks. No way that was Mel Brooks.
Hold on. I'm going to say, some guy goes, the music of the 90s is the best. What? What?
First of all, there's no Guitar Hero after, and I don't mean the game, I mean the actual person playing the guitar. Now, it's depending on your view. Eddie Van Halen or Yngwie Malmsteen. There's always the debate between those two. Some may add some others. But some people go like, well, what about Eric Clapton? 60s, 70s, 80s, move on.
80s.
Santana, 60s, 70s, 80s,
Tony,
move on.
I know this is Tony Iommi, but guess what? He was from the 80s. He started in the 80s. The guy from Rage Against the Machine, guess what? Early 90s. And he started playing way before then. So stop your shit.
When was the last time you heard a ripping guitar solo?
80s.
Now, I'll give credit to some who do songs that it's in the style of those time periods. I think a best example would be like Dragon Force.
Right. The whole song is being played at 200 miles an hour.
But like
and
I said,
some
you actually
say,
hear a guitar solo. That's what I'm pointing out. You actually hear a guitar solo.
Oh, yeah. But here's the thing. Some people think that it's all electronic. No. There is a guy playing synthesizers, but there's a drummer and there's two guitarists. And he is motherfucking playing that thing at 200 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Trust me, Guitar Hero, through the fire and the flames is there, and that is the hardest song to play. Trust me on this one. Somehow, I was playing the song on medium, and it said I missed one note. And I'm going, where the fuck did I miss a note? Because by the time
if
I was done,
missed
my
one
said,
note on a medium
on.
Still, no. I'm going like salute.
Yes. Yeah, I'm like, damn it, where did I miss? And I got a 99% completion. I had 99% in a row. I'm like, where did I miss a note? What did I not click?
I would
the beginning?
Be going like, or me? I would have been going, I'll take it.
Yeah, I was trying to go 100%, but I was like, motherfucker. I'm like, I just took my I put the guitar down, you know, at the tables in Atlantic City, and they go and they fall do that hand wave thing. I'm done. I was like, I'm done. And my nephew, I don't blame you. He walked up to me, gave me a hug. Goes, let's go watch some movies. I'm like, yeah. I'm done. Dude, my fingers were shaking. He goes, can we watch Star Wars? Yeah, we'll watch 1 through 3. Let's go. This when he was younger, I was like, I just can't anymore. He goes, I'll make the popcorn. He's like, yeah, make whatever you want. Just
but going back,
I can't. But it was just, anyway,
going back
that was
here,
the night I had.
Where did Dragon Force learn to play that fast? From a creation from Eddie Van Halen called the Finger Tap.
Probably.
Yeah, that's it. No one.
Okay, I believe it. I believe it. Yeah. What's going on?
So
here?
It's like, you know, we should check. Is there anyone on the call waiting? Just be on the safe side. Now we're talking about guitars.
I am going to look right now. Hold on. Thank you, Aldo. Now, if anybody does want to call in, let me give the guest call in. The number is 714-583-6908. But let's not talk about Gen X and all the generate. We're trying to keep this a superhero talk.
Mm-hmm.
We're just making fun of the fact the guy said this. And trust me, he got thrown back in his face. It's just funny the responses I got back thrown back, and whoever responded to him got like thousands upon, yeah. Even younger just said, yeah, that guy's got to learn to shut the fuck up. Because even younger ones said, Gen X is a generation that you don't mess with. Gen X are the ones that nobody cared about. Gen X is the ones that the baby boomers threw out to the wild. They, you know, it was like Gen X when the sun got to a certain point in the sky, the parents threw them out into the streets. And they had to fend for themselves until the sun went down. And when the streetlights went on, they yelled out and the kids had to come in. You remember that commercial? It's 10 p.m. Do you know where your kids are? To remind the baby boomers that their kid that they had kids and they had to call them in.
And at
them.
That time being, we didn't need cell phones. Why? Because mom can scream. You heard
yeah,
her 10 blocks down the road.
Oh, no, no. You see, the street lights started to go on when it started to get dark. And that was our warning. Oh, shit, we got to get home.
But like I said, when mom screams, there's some truth to the old Sinbad joke here.
When everybody started heading home, when one kid started heading home, everybody started heading home.
Because we were also the last generation to get our ass whooped.
Yeah.
So don't be going like, we got it hard. You want hard? Try leather belt.
We didn't get trophies for participation. And we were told when we lost. Harshly. There wasn't, you finished last. If there were eight teams, you won eighth. No, we lost.
It was 1, 2, 3. That's it.
That was it. Yeah, exactly. Thank you. There was first, second, and third, and everybody else. If you finished fourth by like a hundredth of a second, you lost by a hundredth of a second.
So, that like I said, don't give us no, it's hard. No. Slam the brakes.
That's right.
But boy, that was a big digress. But
anyway. Sorry about that. Anyway, back to
what. But like I said, I would like to see the Broadway play adaptation, non-musical, of Life of Brian. And just like anyone who wants to see anything adapted from the original, they want it a faithful adaptation. Finding Francis, mom voice, your first, middle, and last name. Time to come home. Translation, your ass in trouble. He got it right. You get that middle name. That's it. And it carries on to the marriage here. The thing is, I have a little bit of immunity because my mom had a Norwegian accent. Unless you can perfect that accent, I have some bend. I can't speak for Pogo because of the nationalities if that was the same situation. Pogo, you there? Starlight Dreamer. But Mom! Pogo.
Hello, do you hear me?
Now we hear you.
Hello?
Yeah.
Oh, you know what's wrong? I found a way to get this thing to mute. You click the center of the button. There's a button. You click the center of it and it starts flashing and I'm muted. Okay. Sorry about that. I was going to say, you know what it is? We had a big block and there were like four, there's like eight houses in the middle of the block that almost all the kids lived at. So you all like centralized on the street. So within that, my mom could yell and she could just yell, dinner's ready. She could just yell her first names and it was just like, dinner's ready. So, and we kind of knew, we all had watches on, so we kind of knew what time to come in. So.
Yes,
she would just say,
something that we wore on our wrist, and it had a big hand and a little hand to tell the time.
That's right.
If anyone had a digital watch, means they were rich.
or the person who would soon be my stepdad, at 5 o'clock, he would get them from the city cheap, but they lasted. At 5 o'clock, we just knew. At 5 o'clock, around 5 o'clock ish, start heading in. We're going to eat soon. So, that was all.
Oh, yeah. Alistair goes, I know what you mean, man.
So.
But anyway, how about do we roll call?
All right, where shall we start? Okay, we'll start in City of Heroes.
All right.
Myself, Welcome Man, Mad Viking, and we have Starlight Dreamer. We have Finding Francis. And we have Wolfgang Smirnoff hanging out on the steps of City Hall and out downtown Atlas Park on the Excelsior server. I think that's all. Unless Ronda Rowdy is listening. I don't know.
Hold on. We also have someone listening here. It was Finding Francis.
I said that name.
Oh, okay.
I said Finding Francis. I said that second.
All right.
And hanging out over here on Champions Online in the WCOC studio. More or less. Myself, Welcome Man, Mad Viking, and we have Alan and the Teddysons, Clarence and Mr. Num Num. We have Silver Grit hanging out on top of the camera to make sure they're filming us properly. And behind the cloud of darkness is Alto Mark 7 V2. Why are you hanging out behind the cloud of darkness? I have no idea.
No.
Alto, why are you hanging out behind the cloud of darkness?
While we wait for that here, let's make a very brief version. Here we go. Ship of Heroes, nothing. Your turn.
Okay. City of Titans, nothing. We've got nothing. Nothing at all. Oh, he is dark. Now you are darkness? I thought you were a techno kitty. When did you get darkness powers?
I don't know.
When did he get darkness powers?
He is the night. He is Alto.
I am the night. I am vengeance. I am Alto Bat. Or Alto Gas, I'm sorry.
And you got him going.
Well, courtesy of Alto, I feel like an aura.
All right.
Oh, and I got a title. I'm whistling. I ain't whistling Dixie, though.
Anyway, so that took care of the updates.
Yes. And for those, that Alto Duck, good Lord. After this show, I am heading over to Snake Gulch to do the two dailies. If anybody wants to join me, in a large group, I'm hoping. So we do them tonight, not tomorrow morning. In the wee hours, that's where I will be. All right, anyway. Oh. Yes, Alton.
All right, so it's article time.
No. Anytime he's waving, you want to join us? Yes, you have a question? Or you want to join me? You're welcome to join us.
Waving.
Alto, he's right in my face waving his hand. Yes, you could join me, Paul. Yes, you could join me, Alto. Yes, you could join us. Do you have a question? You want to join me in Snake Gulch? You can join me in Snake Gulch after the show. Yes, you can. Yes, you can join me.
Okay, now we're Generaxers, so you gotta do it the old school way.
Oh, he's just being silly.
Like Arnold Horseshack.
He's just being
Take me,
Mr. Alto.
Wow.
I know this. I am just being silly. Okay. He's just being silly. All right. Okay. Let me see what news stories I have. I know I have a few. I know I picked some. So, even though The Flash ended like 2 weeks ago... Yes, the Arrowverse went out with a whimper. Sorry to say this. The showrunner, Eric Wallace, has revealed he actually wanted to adapt the iconic 2009 DC storyline, Blackest Night, in the series' final crossover event. Now, this really pisses me off. In an interview with EW, Wallace explained how the Flash had already put a bit of work into setting up the famous story arc. Back in Season 8, we set up the Blackest Night storyline with Deathstorm, Wallace stated. When Deathstorm was defeated, the emotional vibrations went all the way back to the Netherverse and another dimension to Necron, who's right out of the comic books. I want to have one final, big, huge, tremendous, awesome, epic crossover, getting everybody, if you're on a show or not, back together for that storyline. That would have allowed me to do is bring back characters that are dead. The idea was to get them all together to stop Necron and all his Black Lanterns, which I'm sure Jeff Johns would have loved because it's his creation. Okay, so for those who don't know, what is Blackest Night? What the hell's the matter with you people? How can you not know what this is? It was awesome. First published in 2009, Blackest Night is a Green Lantern-centric DC comic storyline written by Jeff Johns. The event sees Necron, a personified embodiment of death, reanimating dead heroes in an attempt to snuff out all emotion and life in the universe. It was followed by the Brightest Day storyline, which followed the resurrected heroes and villains. The Flash's ninth season was Grant Gustin's final time as the Flash, as the actor is not set to cameo in the upcoming feature film adaptation of the same character. Ooh. Recently, Gustin opened up about concluding the series after 9 seasons, stating, "It just felt like time." The Flash Season 9 starred Grant Gustin, Candace Patton, Danielle Panabaker, Danielle Nicolette, and Brandon McKnight. The CW series released its final episode on May 24th after being on the air since 2014.
Well, now it would have worked because, remember, Elongated Man got killed.
Right, and they would have had excuse to bring him back or some version of him, but they could have CGI'd him.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's some kind of tweet they found from a couple of years ago that's why he got fired, so.
Right.
Okay, here's a bit of Marvel news. John Favreau says that Robert Downey Jr. nearly played Dr. Doom before Iron Man. So before he would play a major role in establishing the Marvel Cinematic Universe by playing Tony Stark, Robert Downey Jr. nearly played the Fantastic Four's most iconic villain, Dr. Doom. In a retrospective conversation video focused on the 15th anniversary of the original Iron Man movie, Marvel Studios President Kevin Feige and Iron Man director Jon Favreau discussed the process of choosing Robert Downey Jr. for the lead role of Tony Stark / Iron Man as they spoke about the actor. Favreau mentioned that Downey Jr. had, I remember you had all met with him, Robert Downey Jr., already for Dr. Doom or something on another project. I think he had come through on maybe Fantastic Four, the director stated. So everybody sort of knew who he was. I remember sitting down with the guy. I was like, geez, he's got that spark in his eye and he's ready. Robert Downey Jr. would go on to play Iron Man from the original 2008 movie until Avengers Endgame in 2019. The character headlined 3 solo movies and played a major role in Captain America Civil War and in each of the Avengers movies. Dr. Doom was played by Julianne McMahon in Tim Story's 2 Fantastic Four movies in the early 2000s and by Tobey Kebbell in 2015's Fantastic Four. Let's see what else
I think
we got.
He did better with Iron Man. I mean, considering the fact
Chris Evans got away with doing, Human Torch Captain America. I don't know how. Oh, okay. So the Flash movie's coming out soon, right? So here's what DC Studios says you should watch before the Flash. So DC Studios co-CEO James Gunn has revealed that what you need to watch and know before seeing the upcoming DC Universe movie, The Flash. So on Twitter, what main DC Extended Universe movies to watch before The Flash? Gunn replied saying that You don't need to watch anything. Well, that's a, what the fuck was the point of this article? He adds that you should know that Michael Keaton's Batman exists, but that's all you need to know beforehand. Come on now. After a few replies from other users stating that The Flash is the culmination of the DCEU and that those movies should be seen beforehand, Gunn made another statement. This time, the filmmaker explained that, like Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, The Flash is an ending to a huge series of films that also tells you all you need to know within the movie itself. Gunn notes that he initially watched The Flash with some people who hadn't seen any DCEU movies and that they loved it and understood everything. All right, that's cool. The Flash movie sees the return of Ezra Miller as the DCEU Scarlet Speedster / Barry Allen, who they first portrayed in Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice, Justice League, and Zack Snyder's Justice League. Joining Miller are Kiersey Clemons as Iris West, Maribel Verdú as Nora Allen, Sasha Kale as Supergirl, and Ron Livingston as Henry Allen, along with Keaton and Ben Affleck, I'm sorry, who will reprise their respective versions of Bruce Wayne / Batman for the film. The film is directed by It's Andy Muschietti from the latest screenplay written by Christina Hodson of Birds of Prey. It is being executive produced by Marion Jenkins with Michael Disco and Barbara Muschietti set as producers.
Oh, that reminded me. There was another preview of the movie. And I want to confirm there's been a sighting.
I heard there's supposed to be
a Superman we were teased about.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is this Cavill or
no?
Or the new Superman that's going to take over.
Hold on. Here it is. Variety Magazine. The Flash director just announced the movie's most shocking cameo that's decades in the making.
Decades?
Yep. Michael Keaton is the only blast from DC past in Warner Brothers' upcoming superhero tentpole. Wow. Where's Rain? The Flash. During the interview with Esquire Middle East, The Flash director Andy Muschietti revealed that none other than Nicolas Cage will be making a cameo as Superman. As for
you mean the Superman we never got?
The Superman we never got, we're finally going to get.
Holy mackerel. Okay.
We're going to get Nicolas Superman.
Wow. This is what I always wanted to know. Going back to the, you know, the old 50s TV show.
Mm-hmm.
What do they always say when they look up?
Look up in the sky. It's a bird.
Go on.
It's a plane. It's Superman.
Okay, stop right there. But they yell it, right?
Uh-huh.
How come the two guys who yell, it's a bird. Why are they so fucking excited when they yell it's a bird, it's a plane? Why are they so fucking excited that it's a bird, it's a plane? What else are you going to see up in the sky? Where else are you going to find a bird and a plane? Holy shit.
There is another place. It's a bird.
Where?
It's a plane. It's a frog. A frog? Underdog?
Oh, right. But that's a joke about the Superman one. But the point is, when you look up in the sky, it's like, it's a bird. It's a plane. Where the fuck else? What do you expect to see up there? What do you expect to see, you moron? A car? Come here. Like, no,
yes,
shit,
Nicolas
there's a
Cage,
plane up there.
Superman. There is pictures of him wearing the Superman suit.
Is it his Superman suit or a Superman suit? Because I've seen pictures.
All it says is he's going to be in.
All right, because I've seen pictures of his Superman suit. I've seen pictures of, like, what he's supposed to look like.
Mm-hmm.
And Alto, yes, Alto, I see you. Silver regret. Bees, low as the bees.
drop the
yes, bunny. I know there's bees up there. But I mean, all I'm talking about, if you can see a bee all the way up where the planes are, where they're pointing to, holy shit, you've got really good vision. Yes, Alto, the bathroom is out. Yes, you can have the bathroom pass, Alto.
But Nicolas Cage. I was kind of expecting that to be in the crossover on the TV series for some reason.
Wait. Alto, it's a bird. It's a plane. No, it's an amazing B-plane bird.
What? Amazing B-plane bird frog. Is that at all together?
Oh, wait. Alto says, no, wait. He was mistaken. He was completely mistaken.
Threw him off with the frog.
Okay, Alto, I'm waiting.
Well, we can't wait long because coming up soon we get
No, wait. It's a Nicolas Cage, but it's a bee with the head of Nicolas Cage. What? Okay.
From the movie Ghost Ship. Whatever you got, pass that over.
Yeah, it's real. I don't know what's going on. Okay, so hold on. Wait, something weird is going on here.
It's a bird.
There's an
from Finding Friends.
No, hold on. There's an Alto. I see Alan's name. I see the Teddysons. Oh, there's Alan.
We
got
Shannon O'Shea.
Huh?
Shannon O'Shea is in Champions. So, hello, Shannon.
Where?
Right there. Champions.
Oh, okay. No, but Alan is sitting right under the rim of the table on the other side of it. I'm like, I see Clarence. I see Mr. Nom-Nom floating. Like, Alan.
Yeah. It actually
Okay. And I found him. Yes. Right. I got him. Hello, Shannon. Yes, I see Shannon O'Shea. And I think she's going to go, this table over here, the one right here. I see Alan, but I couldn't see him. Like, I saw his name. I couldn't see him. I said, shit's getting weird around here.
Yeah, that does kind of bring it here.
I said, shit's getting weird.
Now Nicolas Cage speaking. I'm here for truth, justice, the American dream. A little more energy, Nick.
Well, supposedly he had it, so.
Yeah, but it was also Tim Burton, so.
I don't know. Okay, so check this out. More news about The Flash, the TV show. So it says here, The Flash had alternate endings revealed by series star Grant Gustin. The CW's The Flash series finished its run. Yes, it's 9 seasons, 2 weeks ago. Speaking to Entertainment Weekly showrunner Eric Wallace and star Grant Gustin revealed that some alternate endings the series had in mind. And what were some of the possible endings? In the interview, Gustin said that initially he was hoping the series would end in a way similar to that of an online theory, so where Barry would sacrifice himself to the Speed Force and become the lightning bolt that struck him. It was a fan theory I saw online about Barry sacrificing himself to the Speed Force and becoming the lightning bolt that struck him in this full circle moment, Gustin said. I thought it was cool, and I remember I talked to showrunner Eric Wallace about it, and he was really set on Barry and Iris having a happy ending. He didn't want to see Barry have a hero's death, the same way Oliver, Stephen Amell, did on Arrow. After seeing this week's finale, however, Gustin said he's glad the ending, they ended up not going with what he wanted. It would have taken away from Oliver's sacrifice if we also had to see Barry make that same sacrifice in The Flash, because Oliver sacrificed himself for Barry and for the other heroes to continue, said Gustin. Looking back on this, I'll really appreciate that that's how Eric wanted to finish things. after everything that we've all been through and how consistent Barry and Iris were as a couple, it finishes with them being happy and starting a family and Team Flash moving into the future together. I think it was the right decision and fans will enjoy that. As for Wallace, he also had his own ideas for how this show could end, but ultimately ended up not being able to implement them in time. Since there was a 10th season in store for The Flash, Wallace said he wanted to do more, but the showrunner did say the team got to the emotional heart of what they wanted to accomplish. I got the emotional heart of it, but because there was no season 10, there was just no time to set it up, Wallace said. The ending that I did have in mind had the negative forces involved. We didn't get it quite as I wanted, but the negative forces storyline would have been far, far bigger.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, it got weird with the negative forces, so. Okay, now back to the movie. The Flash producer, DCU movie being canceled was, quote-unquote, never real. The Flash producer, Barbara Muschietti, has debunked any rumors about the show being, it says show, but I don't know if they're talking about the movie, being potentially canceled before release. Was The Flash almost canceled? Barbara Muschietti spoke with EW alongside director Andy Muschietti and said that there was no real fear of the movie being canceled throughout its production as a result of Ezra Miller's legal troubles. And boy, have we covered them on this show. The producer stated, no, not at all. No, that was never real. Boy, we sweating that shit out. And he noted that both himself and Barbara do speak with Miller and that they are empathetic towards those with mental health issues. We have a lot of empathy in general for people who need help, and especially in mental health issues, he explained. That's why they are taking the necessary steps to deal with their recovery, and we support them in that. DC Studios, The Flash... The Flash movie is directed by Andy Muschietti from a screenplay written by... Okay, World's Collide in The Flash when Barry uses superpowers to travel back in time in order to change the events of the past, reads the synopsis. But when his attempt to save his family inadvertently alters the future, Barry becomes trapped in a reality in which General Zod has returned, threatening annihilation, and there are no superheroes to turn to. The film is executive produced by Marion Jenkins, with Michael Disco and Barbara Muschietti serving as producers. It is slated to arrive in theaters on June 16th. And I can't find an article on this, but I saw a commercial for it on Disney Plus. June 18th, Marvel's Secret Invasion begins.
In other words, the Skrulls are coming.
That's right. And we were not on the air for it, but remember when I said this? We were talking about Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania?
Mm-hmm.
It is on Disney Plus. I've seen it twice already. Oh, wait.
Right.
No, sorry. I saw it once.
Now, hopefully, I know I'm probably doing a wish that is just not going to happen. But maybe...
Oh, give your best shot.
Just... maybe they can correct what they did and bring in the real Mar-Vell.
Who knows? Maybe that'll be for the third movie. Oh, and I have Star Wars news. I heard some interesting things. Remember how we talked about The Last Jedi in the third movie, Rise of Skywalker, and all this footage that was left on the editing room floor? Well, guess what, kids? You have to wait a couple of years, because for the 10th anniversary of The Last Jedi, all that footage is being put back in for the 10th anniversary of The Last Jedi.
Maybe it'll
they're
make re-edits.
Some sense. Yes, that's what they're saying. It's Favreau and Filoni taking over. They're re-editing the movie. They're adding in, basically for both movies, they're adding in like an hour of stuff. It's not going to change much, but they're hoping it will appease, you know, they're not refilming it. They're not doing a great, it's not going to be like, hey, look, we're not redoing the movies. But we're not refilming them, but we're going to add some shit into it. you know, and hopefully the Rise of Skywalker. Like, remember how Kylo Ren, the actor, he said, yeah, I had a bunch of speaking lines in the second half of the movie. They just cut them all out. Well, guess what? When that re-releases for the 10th anniversary, all his lines are being thrown back in. And guess what? With all this, it's like over an hour more footage. When all these scenes are put back in, they said it's two totally different movies. And I want to say this. If you didn't like Mandalorian Season 3 compared to the first two, I don't know why, but Kathleen Kennedy had her, that name. Every time I hear that name, I get white knuckled fists. I close my eyes. My face goes red. Why? And then, how the fuck is she still there? Everything she touches turns to shit. Basically, everybody has it's like this. You know the Midas touch? She has the reverse. Everything she touches turns to shit. It's like George Lucas handed her a 5,000-page binder on what the sequel trilogy should have been. She took it, threw it into a closet, quadruple locked it, set the closet on fire, and said he never gave us anything. So much so, swearing up and down, people said, we have a game plan. Followed his game plan, you had a game plan. Then admitting, going into the third movie, we still don't know who the big bad overall is. Well, gee, maybe you should have taken a gander at that 5,000-page volume George Lucas gave you.
Mm-hmm. That'd have helped. Just a little.
But season three, because, you know, Kathleen Kennedy thought it was a good idea to bring in Jack Black and Lizzo, thought, you know, why work on a script in detail? Oh, yeah, we had this conversation before the show. This is the thing. She, again, Harrison Ford, wanted his character killed because I guess he worked with Kathleen Kennedy on the sequel trilogy. So just kill my character. And now the new Indiana Jones movie is coming out. And some fans are reacting. And this is her and this is what she had to say. The fans are idiots. They don't understand what we're doing here. We're trying to put a woman in power. Because now, ladies and gentlemen, it's not going to be Shia LaBeouf's character taking over. It's going to be Indiana Jones' niece becoming the new main character of these series of movies, if they continue.
It's not a case of we're against a woman taking the role. It's just...
But it's what she said. It's like, I'm not worried about plot, story, or dialogue. I'm more concerned about empowering women, a diverse cast. That's what she's more worried about.
Now, if anyone's seen the video interview of the two prime characters of this movie, take a look. Harrison Ford has the exact same look on his face that he has either that Harrison Ford has. Someone goes to a con and let's talk about Han Solo. He doesn't like talking about Han Solo. Don't do it. And also, it was the same look that I saw Bill Murray had during the promotions of the 2016 Ghostbusters. Am I wrong? It's the same look.
Oh,
he's like, I'm just here for the money. That's pretty much it. So that just tells me right out of the gate, this is not going to go well. And it's not a case of the woman factor. No, it's going to be this was badly written. And you're going to someone who has Oscar winning and box office record leveling movies. Plain and simple. He knows what's good and knows what's not. And the look on his face is saying, this is not good.
No, no. It's not. I'm trying to see if this website I use has any news. I get a little bit weird. It was just from like in the past 2 days. It was over the weekend, Europe 2023 Star Wars something or other.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I probably Google it.
I mean, if you want to go into a lesser role, that's like asking Gary Berghoff, so how was your time playing Radar? Don't do that. He used to live in Marathon. Maybe he still lives in Marathon, Florida. But I remember seeing a tourist asking Gary Berghoff about Radar. You saw the locals go, oh, shit.
Okay, I found a video for Trashing Fans. But I just want the actual article.
Look, Tanner says, still watch it. If it's Gold or Drek, I will find out then. Fine. You know, we're not saying
they
don't make their own opinions. We're just seeing, you know, well, we were talking about Ghostbusters 2016 with Bill Murray and his look. This is kind of like, this is not looking good. No energy.
Basically, okay. All right, basically what I'm looking at here, I can't watch the video now. Basically, she's promoting the new projects, but basically she's trashing the fans. Blaming the fans for not liking anything, not appreciating everything. And not appreciating what she's trying to put across.
It's the same argument.
Don't you think the fan?
The same argument.
Right. She doesn't get it. It's like, why is she still in charge? I don't get it. How can she still be in charge of all these projects? What's funny is, though, back in the day, She's produced all the Indiana Jones films with Spielberg. She executive produced Back to the Future films, Goonies, and Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Okay, so what the hell has changed? Does she just hate Star Wars? I don't get it. Does she hate Lucas?
I couldn't tell you. I really can't.
These movies are just horrible.
It's just, and the thing is, you know, we've seen actors or directors or producers or writers that go, I'm giving you the warning, this is going to suck. We've seen
it many
times before. And
yes,
at least they owned up to it. I was like, okay, let's see how bad. You know, that'll get us curious to go, let's see how bad he's talking about. But, you know, to just blame the fans who just want the story.
The fans don't get it. The fans don't get or appreciate what I'm trying to do here. Well, maybe what you're trying to do is all messed up.
The success before. Bravo. Congratulations. We applaud you. As of now, blah. No other way to say it. Blah.
Horrible. Oh, okay. Look at the time. We're running late. Yes, yes, yes. They're running in. Okay, okay. Thank you. Thank you for getting me the tome from the tomb. Yes, I got it. Okay. Shoot, scram. Beat it. Oh, that's very nice. They're all wearing We Love John Cleese t-shirts. Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't. Okay. Oh, okay.
They're
all
doing
right.
The silly walks.
Yes, sir. Well, they're hovering, so.
Well, it would be all a
right.
silly walk.
That would be, I guess. Oh, the middle one, he's hovering in the dragging. All right. Anywho, let's just say, as we're superheroes, if your arch nemesis is from this book,
Nemesis.
You need a major upgrade. Oh, hell, Lord Satan has joined us. Hello, Lord Satan. But you need a major upgrade because in this book are oddball criminals from comic book history. For they are members of the Legion of Regrettable Supervillains. And we start off in the Golden Age.
The show has been rated PG-13 by the Motion Picture Association. May as well get it right out of it.
Huh? Ooh,
the Golden Age is always where we get the... What were they thinking?
Actually, back then they got G ratings. I don't know why. They always did. I don't know why. Anyway, this villain, the enemy of Buzz Crandall, created by Fletcher Hanks as Bob Jordan. Wow. Okay, when the writer has to have an alias and be incognito, you know we're in trouble. All right.
Oh, no.
This villain debuted in Planet Comics number 7, Fiction House, July 1940. Fun fact, Lepus is Latin for rabbit. Oh, this could be a Monday night thing. All right, the quote, I shall destroy all the civilized planets, but the uncivilized ones I'll leave alone. Maybe Bunny Knight is saved. The villain's name, Lepus the Fiend. All right,
so we have
here.
A French
Fletcher.
Bunny. A French
wee
Bunny.
Wee.
Okay.
Wee. Oh, I am the Avenged Bunny. He would fit right in on Bunny Night. Either one of them, or both. All right. Anyway, Fletcher Hanks is a legendary comics creator, best known for his bizarre, dreamlike tales and distinctive outsider art. He is most famous for nearly omnipotent superheroes like Skull-Faced Jungle Goddess Fantoma and Stardust the Super Wizard. I remember these two. Stardust, he did the weirdest shit to the villains. Remember? He had the weirdest punishment. And we question, like, shouldn't he be a villain? Anyway. But even his more mortal cretins exhibit his peculiar approach to storytelling. When his heroes aren't wielding limitless powers and executing colorful punishments, you can count on his villains to do it for them. Such is the case of Lepus the Fiend, a fur-covered misanthrope who seeks to destroy the universe. He makes plenty of trouble for Buzz Crandall of the Space Patrol, who detects strange, powerful rays being used against the planet Venus. Subjected to tremendous forces, the world is torn out of its orbit. Meanwhile, Crandall's assistant, Sandra Hale, warned him of similar danger on Earth. Hey, that's our planet. The culprit is Lepus, the sneering, shirtless, hair-slathered menace, is operating from the confines of a nearby blazing star. I shall make all the universe wild and primitive, he declares, first on his agenda, causing Earth and Venus to crash into each other. But Buzz Crandall has a plan, too, rocketing toward the source of the mysterious rays in his ray-proof cruiser. Good thinking, Buzz. He prepares his own super-powerful weapon, a rapid-fire interplanetary gun that will demolish his outfit. Buzz and Sandra battle their way toward Lepus's planet-smashing machine, even as the evil creature's rays are wreaking genuine havoc. On the Earth, the temperature all over the globe has become below zero, and the days and nights last only a few minutes, explains this caption in a panel depicting a crowd of desperate people taking to the woods. Their dash for safety serves little purpose. As the grim caption explains, people perish by the thousands as two planets leave their orbits. The wild Lepus has a ferocious hatred for civilizations. He doesn't have very good math skills. A miscalculation on his part causes the two planets to narrowly avoid striking each other. Before he can recalculate, Crandall's opposing ray gun does its work. Lepus's scientific stronghold crumbles, and Venus and Earth slide back into their orbits without further struggle. Disaster averted. As for Lepus, he suffers the justice delivered upon all intergalactic villains who seek to smash planets for fun. He is killed off panel, his corpse showing up after the fact on a celebratory Crandall's all-seeing view screen. Well, wasn't that nice?
Well, I think Bugs Bunny wants to argue the fact that Lepus cannot do math, because his own quote is, if there's one thing rabbits can do, they know how to multiply.
Exactly. There you go.
Call shenanigans.
Shenanigans on Lepus. Okay. And because we were down to modern age, we shall do a bonus Golden Age hero. Villain. Sorry. Is an enemy of Yellow Jacket. I don't think the Yellow Jacket we know. Created by unknown.
Oh, no.
Here we go again. Debuted in Yellow Jacket number 8, E. Levi Publishing in February 1946. Favorite architectural style, post-murderism. Oh, that's lovely. His quote, I'll show them. I'll design something for them that they won't see because they'll be dead. Oh, that's a horrible way. Jeez. And the villain's name? Oh, good Lord. The Mad Architect. Okay, look. If I'm having a new house done or something, I don't want him doing it. Anyway. While mad scientists and mad doctors get most of the press, the supervillain game has also seen mad lawyers, mad politicians, mad poets. Example, The Jingler on page 79, which we did a few weeks ago, and at least one mad architect. Jonathan Wayne, not John Wayne, Jonathan Wayne, self-described greatest architect in the world, finds himself furious at and resentful of an organization called the Architects League, which has snubbed his designs. He decides to murder its members. Same architect, everyone. I want 10 years to present my designs. Oof. Sorry about that. I lost my spot. Hold on. Architects League, which is snubbed his design. Okay, here we go. He decides to murder its members. Named architects everyone. I waited 10 years to present my designs. Wayne vents as he fires a bullet into the heart of the league's president. And all I got was derision. Absconding via the fire escape, he pledges to continue his revenge scheme. Death is riding with me tonight. His second victim, however, happens to be a close friend of Vince Harley, secretly the crime fighter known as Yellow Jacket. Harley is too late to save his friend from the maddened Wayne, who knocks both Harley and his assistant Diane Carter unconscious as he flees. Wayne's vengeance is briefly put on hold when a radio news broadcast reports the murders. The killer was seen by Miss Diane Carter, reads the reporter, adding the unusual extra detail, Diane's home address. Is that so? Sneers the Mad Arctic gleefully. Well, Miss Carter, you are getting a visitor tonight. Of course, it's a trap! Thank you, Admiral Ackbar. Yellowjacket is waiting outside Diane's bedroom. When Wayne enters, the black and gold crime fighter leaps to her defense, aided by some buzzing sidekicks. Bees to me! See, the bees have it tonight. Night of the bees. He cries, summoning a well-trained swarm, seemingly from nowhere. Despite his apian army, Yellowjacket is a near match for the mad architect. They fight each other to a standstill, with the hero further commanding, bees, stop him, bees away. The Donnybrook is successfully ended by Diane. Working a brick loose from the floor top, she sighs with exasperation. I'll catch my death of cold up here barefooted. I might as well end this fight right now, which she does by knocking Wayne unconscious with a brick, saying, go around choking girls with you. And so the humblest of building materials finishes off the mad architect forever.
And okay. Surprise, Alto has not gone bee crazy during that whole part.
I know. I don't know what happened to him that time.
Yeah, I guess he got buzzed out.
Oh, boo, I say. Okay. Oh, this will be interesting. All right, we're going to the Silver Age this time. This one is an enemy of whoever's available. Okay. Created by...
Equal opportunity. There you go.
There you go. That's right. Created by Henry Scarpelli. Debuted in Charlton Premiere number 3, Charlton Cinema, Charlton Comics, January 1968. No relation to Sinestro, Sarcastro, or San Francisco. The quote, in the name of fair play, I befriend evildoers. The villain's name, oh God, this is going to be Sinistro, Boy Fiend. That's right, Sinistro.
Boy Fiend.
Close,
huh?
To Sinestro. Yeah, but close to Sinestro, but all I. Two I's and an O at the end. All right. Fate cast Jack Biceps in the mold of the old American boy, explains the opening caption to his debut adventure. Doomed to wholesome good looks and the admiration of the playful. Wait, hold on. Explains the opening caption. Doomed to wholesome good looks, the admiration of souls, and the firm faith of his parents and teacher that young Jack will play the hero's role in life. But there's a twist. Jack Biceps intensely dislikes the good guys in our culture. The introduction continues. He has no love for Captain USA, the Green Spider, Ant-Man. Oh, God. Ant-Man spelled A-U-N-T. Man. That's a potent roster of superheroes. Or rather, Charlton Comics analogs of famous superheroes. Jack also has it in for a couple of Charlton's top-selling super do-gooders like the Blue Beetle and Peacemaker. To take on even zealous superheroes, Jack needs powers of his own, downing a potent blend of quote-unquote powdered mushroom, goat horn, spinach, and indignant goldfish brings a crash, a sizzle, and a rumble, but leaves Jack with nothing more than an upset stomach. Even for a villain superhero, the motto must be try and try again. And try again. Jack does. Try again, Jack does. Assembling a flying gyro, oh good lord, sled. Despite the package having arrived without instructions, he arms himself with a wall-piercing x-ray scope, a super gun that fires ominous purple-brown liquid, jets hidden under his cape, a flashing hypnotic bite, and the most important, a pea shooter. He also is equipped with a micro mesh net, known to hold fast a killer whale. Sinistro doesn't meet many killer whales, but the net does do a decent job sidelining the super rogue Captain USA. The self-styled boy fiend makes a pretty good showing by aiding the efforts of Irish Jaime Schultz and I'm sorry. It's just, oh my god, my eyes blurred for a second. I lost the whole damn thing. So that makes pretty good showing. I'll do that. So sideline Supergirl captain, you say, okay, sorry about that. The self-styled boy fiend makes a pretty good showing by aiding the efforts of Irish Jaime Schultz, good lord, and his mob-like organization, the Dosa Mosa. Hey, the Dosa Mosa, what do you do? Ah. He staves off the efforts of not only Captain USA, but also the Blue Beetle, Green Spider, and Peacemaker. But Schultz is reluctant to share his ill-gotten gains, so Jack pulls a fire alarm, bringing police and firefighters down on Schultz's gang. The entertaining idea behind Sinistro may be an adroit commentary on the suddenly overcrowded comics racks of the day. In the wake of Batman's late 60s television stardom, publishers seem to crank out dozens of superheroes every week. With all these characters around, a rotten old crook doesn't stand a chance nowadays, Sinistro complains bitterly. He concludes with an assessment of the costumed hero game that seems to resonate even today. The field is overcrowded.
There's just too many. Cut it down a bit. Give us a...
give us a chance, would you? Pick a number. Let an old man get some work in here. And that's this week's entries into the Legion of Regrettable Supervillains. Right? Hey, give an old man a chance, would you? Huh? Hey, you could go next week. I want this
one. Hey.
What do you know about supervillaining? You know Bupkis. fully on you. You know nothing. Nothing at all.
Like these supervillains today, but Sugarna, that's what they're doing there. They think they know everything.
They know nothing. They whine and complain. Oh, this lock's too hard. Oh, there's too many chains on the link. Oh, boo-hoo. The attack dog's too rabid. Oh, boo-hoo. What do you think you're going to have, a little poodle?
In my prime, we got our nemesis with some paper gum. Paper clips, some bubble gum, and a wire. That's how we beat them. And we liked it.
And we got away with it, too. You kids get you today, these villains, they get defeated by meddling kids and a dog. There. I used to escape the FBI and the CIA. you Michiganers. What do you know about villaining? Nothing. Nothing. What the hell's a mystery machine? The guy wears an ascot. Put some grease on the floor in a barrel and you fall for it. And the one over there, she keeps losing her glasses.
And that's supposed to be the smart one.
Please. Why does she put, you know, she should tie them around her head. They won't fall off. What do we got here? A teddy bear.
When they finally meet an arch nemesis who's just retired, is like, the supervillain business today, it's too much. Remember when they had all the sidekicks? Derby and
Oh, and the Venture Brothers, yes. Yes.
Yep.
See, they should just do a show about the old villains from the Scooby-Doo thing. And Daphne, what the hell? She kept getting captured. And she was supposed to be one of the top members of the gang. Holy mackerel.
Well, now she is. Now she is. They actually... in the latest one, she got control of the mystery gang.
Well, in the comic book, Miss, there was a comic book that was out for a while. Scooby Apocalypse.
Yep.
I hadn't read all of them. She was actually smarter. She was actually like a TV reporter who had some skills to her. So
finding friends. Old Giza Gamers complaining about Kid Gamers today. Complete with the hacking, gagging, coughing.
Hold on. Look at this one over here. On the table. There's a cat with a TV on his head. What are you going to do? Huh? Entertainers? And a frying pan. What are you going to do, huh? Now he's got a bow. Now he thinks it's Errol Flynn.
Well, it's a month away here, but I think it's safe to say we'll be off July 3rd because of July 4th.
Yes, we'll take that. Yes, we'll take that off.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we'll take the 4th of July weekend off. But then after that, no, we have to start getting ready for DawnCon. I mean, we're getting ready for DawnCon. This week there'll be a big meeting. When I say Paragonians assemble, no, Paragon Dawn, get over here. We'll have a meeting. What night is good for you? Thursday, you said?
Thursday. As long as Thunderstruck and Ehrlich, come on. We're good.
Oh, boy.
If not, then you're looking at Saturday. Then you're looking, making sure Coconut and Jester come on.
What? Well, I'm supposed to go to friends for the afternoon, so what time Saturday?
Well, Coconut starts at 8 p.m.
I should be back by then. I think I should be back by then.
Well, I'm going to jump a little early and get back into the base because of the loading screen factor.
Okay. Yes. And it's almost that time, so really quickly, thank you, Mad Viking, for co-hosting. Thank you, Reed, for tuning in this week. Read those comic books. Read those superhero novels. Watch those, well, whatever superhero TV shows you can find. Watch the superhero movies, those genre shows, genre movies, et cetera. Stick around next for the Greatest Generation podcast on Dawn Radio. And first of all, Lord Satan is saying, Hell's Demonic Legion will be hosting a demon dance birthday party for Hell's Officer, Panda Monica. The birthday party is this Sunday, June 11th, at 9 p.m. Eastern in Hell's Concert Hall. To enter Hell, use passcode capital letters Hell 666-13805. Woo! Rock on. And their bass is pretty cool. Let me tell you. We were talking about music before. Each room, you know, about the Gen X thing. Each room looks like a cover of a 70s rock album. So.
And I think they actually put Barney in one of the cages.
Oh, that's cool. I think that's right.
I think they put Barney in one of the cages. So Barney's
in
hell.
You say that, yeah. Barney's in hell. Where he will, yes. It's a fitting place after Healy, after what happened with the March Madness mayhem. Okay. Thank you, Francis. Thank you, finally, Francis. Good show. Thank you. Laugh my ass off. Lord Saint says laugh my ass off. All right. Thank you, Silver. Thank you, clapping for us. Night, friends. Stay terrific. You too, Alan. And okay. And I was saying we could do the D&D game for DawnCon. That would be cool.
Right.
Okay. Also, yeah, for that Sunday, we could do it right after, maybe right after the, that Sunday, right after the Fast and the Furious, as we always do. To end it. Oh, all right. Well, for those listening to the after show, okay, I will get this. Yeah, about 30 seconds ago. All right, good show. Go enjoy. I'm going to go hit the Snake Gulch thing.
All right.
Enjoy. See you later. All right. I'll see you later. I'll talk to you. I'll see you Wednesday night, probably. Definitely.
Okay.
Have a good one. Thank you. Bye.
Yep. Bye. Disconnect.